Welkom bij de 168ste eeuw. Mijn naam is Herbert Blankenstein. Veilig bestaat niet, zeggen drie ICT-grootheden in deze uitzending. Zo veilig mogelijk, daar moet u het mee doen. Ook op uw computer.
BNR Specials, de elektronische eeuw. Nu op BNR. BNR.
Afgelopen maandag werd in Eindhoven het nieuwe instituut EIPSI geopend. Eindhoven Institute for the Protection of Systems and Information. Dat gebeurde met een symposium waar een aantal supersterren uit de computerbeveiliging optrad. Bruce Schneier bijvoorbeeld, vermaard security guru en oprichter van het bedrijf Counterpain, die op de proppen kwam met de stelling dat de fundamentele problemen van de beveiliging niet meer de techniek betreffen, maar iets anders.
Well, they're about people, and that shouldn't come as a surprise because security is fundamentally about people. You know, technology is a vehicle. It's a vehicle of attack. It's a vehicle of defense. It's a tactic of attack and defense. But basically, security is about people. And IT security is no less about people because computers are involved. So really, the fundamental problems of IT security are about people, about using technology, about applying technology, about implementation, installation, use, user interface, exceptions, disasters, update, disposal, and everything that's around security. And that makes the problem much harder and also much more interesting.
Dan ligt de vraag voor de hand, als de mensen het probleem zijn, wat kunnen mensen dan doen om dat probleem het hoofd te bieden?
I don't think there's ever one answer to that. I mean, what do people need to do to minimize the threats against their children? I mean, there's no answer. You do lots of things, you do nothing, you pay attention. You know, if there was an easy answer like that, we'd all be doing it. I think the threats are varied and complicated. Often people can't do anything. Some stuff they can do. It depends on the circumstance and what the details are. You know, there's always a chasing some kind of a silver bullet, of a thing you can do to make it go away. There never was such a thing. There's nothing you can do to prevent murder. There's nothing you can do to prevent burglary. There's nothing you can do to prevent computer crime. I mean, there are techniques that people use, and they work marginally well, some better than others, and that'll continue, you know, as long as we're people.
Schneier heeft het niet specifiek over computerbeveiliging. Meestal niet. Hij houdt zich ook veel bezig met maatregelen tegen terrorisme. Althans, met commentaar geven daarop. Eens per jaar plaagt hij beveiligers overal ter wereld, maar vooral in de VS, met een hilarische prijsvraag.
Well, this is the movie plot threat contest. And a lot of what I do is common sense security. Is rebutting what I think is silly security out there. My latest book, the subtitle was Thinking Sensibly About Security in an Uncertain World. And really, that's my deal, thinking sensibly about security. And one day a year, April Fool's Day is sort of an American holiday for jokes. I don't know if it is also here in Netherlands. I try to poke fun at silly security. And that's the movie plot threat contest. So the first year, the contest was to come up with a terrorist plot that would scare people. And, I mean, just like we see them in real life, in the United States, we hear about terrorists with crop dusters and terrorists with scuba gear and terrorists doing this and that. And there are all these movie plot threats, right? Terrorists going to attack the Olympics, they're going to attack the Super Bowl, they're going to attack the Oscars. You know, the press just reports these again and again. And it's all kind of silly. And I wanted to take it to an extreme. So come up with a movie plot threat that would make people scared. And I got hundreds of entries. And it was a lot of fun to do. The second year, I had a similar contest. And this was playing off on the liquid ban, which is another, you know, silly movie plot threat, right? Terrorists with liquids are going to blow up airplanes. So we have to ban all liquids. It kind of makes no sense. But I wanted people to come up with a terrorist plot that would cause the airlines to ban something obvious, like banning shoelaces or banning suitcases or shirt buttons or eyeglasses or, you know, something you couldn't possibly ban. And again, I got some really creative examples of terrorist plots to blow up airplanes. And the plot I picked that was the winner would require the banning of water because there's nothing else you could possibly do, which, of course, is ridiculous. This year I did I moved away from terrorism, did something more marketing. And this was a contest to come up with a threat you didn't know existed and then to sell you a product that would make you safer. So there's, for example, then write a little piece of ad copy. So there's a product that someone suggested that would have a big airbag and inflate around your house if an out-of-control car comes careening towards it. There's a product to put a mesh around your banister because your child's head might get stuck in it. There's products to protect your DNA from cloning. All sorts of great ideas. Now, there's a lot of real products here too, right? There are products you can buy. You can buy a wristband to put around your child's wrist that'll sound an alarm if your child falls into the pool. Right? This is an actual product you can buy. You can buy a mesh screen to put at your cell phone's earpiece so the dangerous radiation doesn't get in your head. I mean, it's very silly, but you can buy it. You can buy alien abduction insurance. There's an insurance company that will sell you insurance against being abducted by an alien. And these are all examples of these sort of movie plot threats that have been commercialized. So the contest is still going on. If you just type third movie plot threat contest into Google, you can get to it, or go to Schneier.com, and you can enter your own entry or read the others. They're great fun. You can have a good half hour of fun reading the entries.
But was this the idea of this third version that people would enter real products?
Oh, no. These are all joke products. No. I mean,
but you were telling me that some of those were real.
Oh, some of them are, and sometimes the real ones are funnier than the joke ones, but the goal of the contest is to come up with a joke one.
Okay. You told me the idea was to poke fun at silly security. I suppose that's working, is it?
Well, it's getting a surprising amount of press. I mean, it seems like poking fun at silly security gets more attention than trying to be sensible about security. And sometimes, you're right, sometimes you have to, you know, make people think by poking fun at something. You know, I spend 51 weeks a year writing sensible articles about security. 1 week a year, I can you know, have a little fun.
Yeah, but is poking fun the only goal? I mean, I would suppose another goal might be that it would stop people from doing silly security.
You know, the hope is it does, but there's a lot of people out there, there's a lot of silly security out there. But yes, I mean, I like to think that my writings do make people think a little bit differently about security.
Veiligheidskwesties zijn voor privépersonen wel anders dan voor bedrijven. Bruce Schneier brengt het verschil onder woorden.
Well, there are certainly differences. I mean, the threats that corporations face are different than the threats that people face. You know, people are worried about crime against their persons and their homes and maybe their children and maybe financial crime against their bank accounts. Businesses are much more complicated. They're worried about insider attacks. They're worried about different types of fraud. The kinds of things employees can do or customers or partners are very different. And, you know, and there are lots of similarities, of course. I mean, crime is crime, fraud is fraud, theft is theft. But because companies are so much more complex, the trade-offs they face are so different.
Whitfield Diffie, Chief Security Officer van Sun Microsystems, is van mening dat de security zoals wij die nu kennen ondergraven zal worden door outsourcing en door het ontstaan van webdiensten.
What I believe is going to happen is that outsourcing of computation will become very common. So right now, what I point to is that even organizations so obsessed with security that they run programs to watch for their employees' email and be sure they don't sneak out confidential documents, these organizations still use Google for all sorts of research. And that means if you had access to the Google query stream, you would know basically what every marketing group, every engineering group, every legal group, you know, in the world is interested in. Right? Now, in the next several years, I think that outsourcing of computation is going to become more and more common. And so I imagine, for example, Pixar has a business at the moment that's sort of $1 million at a pop, right? Hollywood sends them a movie, they do the post-processing, they send back the movie, and that's, you know, the very large bill. But I think that's going to migrate down to where people who want to make home movies are going to be able to, you know, send them by internet to Pixar and get them, you know, it'll be $10 or something like that. And that people who are designing automotive engines, they really won't be able to afford to do the heat flow analysis themselves because there'll be somebody who's made a fine breakthrough in finite element method computations, and they'll analyze your V8 engine for 200 euros. And you couldn't do it for less than 10,000 yourself. I mean, so all we're going to face again, right? If you look at the First World War, the First War fought in the era of radio. Nobody could afford not to use radio, right? You didn't use radio, you're going to lose. On the other hand, radio exposed all of your activities to your opponents. And in that particular case, the problem was rescued by cryptography, right? Well, 20th century, with Delaware cryptography, you can have pretty secure radio communications, right? You can get the advantages of radio without the disadvantages. But in this case, it's not exactly clear whether the problem can be solved, because you are handing out computations. You have to really to give the data to the people you want to do the computations. So what I was arguing is that the basic, the frontier of security is going to move from being technicalities like cryptography and security and operating systems to being a matter of law and contract, very much the way it has been for a long time in, you know, what we disparagingly call in the US bricks and mortar businesses.
Dat betekent niet dat de security maatregelen van nu, zoals antivirus, firewalls en cryptografie, zullen verdwijnen, maar dat ze aangevuld moeten worden met overeenkomsten. En die moeten liefst automatisch uitonderhandeld worden, want dat gaat sneller.
I think that all the technical machinery will still be in use. I think there will be lots of cryptography, there will be secure operating systems, there will be confinement of processes. All of these things will still occur. But the fundamental framework will be one of contracts, just the way it is, has been in business for a very long time. If you have to manufacture a prototype, you send the blueprints to a machine shop. The blueprints, either explicitly in contract or in the tradition of the industry, right, will be protected. They'll make one prototype for you. You'll pay for it. They'll send it to you. They'll send you back your blueprints. They won't give either thing to your competitors. I believe we're going to enter an era in web services, in internet interaction, in which that will be the dominant security phenomenon, and all of the technical things like the cryptography will exist to support this contractual structure. What will change is that all this will happen very quickly, which, and then since that, you know, I have a second's worth of computation to be done, I can't spend a week having the lawyers negotiate over it. It's got to be figured out by programs negotiating with each other. And, you know, it would be awkward if they took another second, whole second doing it, right? And so I'm imagining a world in which there are automatic negotiations, automatic verification of the ability to fulfill the conditions of the contract. Right? And I suspect, I actually think the governments are rather ahead of industry in this. The U.S. terminology is that a company has, quote, a facility clearance. That is to say, it has been inspected and its personnel have been vetted, and it has the credentials that permit the government on rather rapidly to give it a secret contract, right? And so I think you need these two elements. You need a longer-term phenomenon in which you decide which organizations are trustworthy, and a very fast phenomenon in which you say you pick an organization that you trust because it has the proper credentials, and you're able to send this particular piece of work to it and get its work product.
En als het gaat om de alledaagse bedreigingen van bijvoorbeeld transacties op internet, daarvan is Diffie nou niet bepaald onder de indruk.
So as we're going to control our society, control power generation, air traffic control, communications, banking, etc. with computers, there are some less flexible mechanisms at the bottom that we really need to secure better than we are. But if you look at internet commerce, sort of the upper layer of this, the actual layer at which people are dealing with each other, then I'm not very worried fundamentally about security. I think that the mechanisms we have will be employed as needed to protect this sort of transactions.
Does it mean that today's threats, you don't think they're very serious?
Well, serious to whom? They don't show any signs of destroying society, right? Lots of people will lose money. Lots of people will make money cheating them. I don't, right? So security is very much a matter of viewpoint, right? And so let me give you a possibly slightly silly example, but an expressive example of a competition between two things, and each side would call its activity security. Right? One can imagine that the motion picture industry would say, you know, we're not going to show you our best movies unless it's only your naked eyeballs against the screen. There's no way you can record them. There's no way you can delay them. There's no way you can filter them, right? We'll, if you'll accept the right kind of a tamper-resistant TV, then we'll send you brand new first-run movies at home and charge you, you know, €3 for them instead of five that you would pay if you went to the theater. Parents might respond and say, have you seen the stuff you guys show in your movies? We're not letting our children watch these things until we've watched them first, right? We want to, and we're not going to pay twice for them. We want to record them, right? And then some of the recordings will allow our children to watch.
Now, that's security too,
those
right?
Those are both security claims, yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. And so basically, security is a term, as currently used, that, as the diplomats say, codes for legitimacy. It's legitimate for anybody to be saying, I need to have security. But in fact, what it typically codes for is protecting your interests. And so what you mean by security varies depending on what interest you're looking at.
Veiligheid is belangenbehartiging en houdt dus voor iedereen iets anders in. Voor bedrijf iets anders dan voor klant bijvoorbeeld. Gebreken in de veiligheid zijn niet bedreigend voor de samenleving, vindt Diffy. En dat is maar goed ook, want volgens Andrew Odlitsko, hoogleraar aan de Universiteit van Minnesota, kunnen mensen helemaal geen veilige systemen bouwen. Tenminste, dat ze het wel kunnen, is nooit aangetoond.
Well, in principle, there is no kind of no mathematical theorem which says they cannot build them, except we have 50 years of experience showing that people make mistakes. Every time even top-notch programmers implement something, it sort of works, but when they go over it and check it carefully, they find more mistakes.
If people cannot build secure systems, what's your own work worth?
Well, actually, the fact that we cannot build truly secure systems is almost a guarantee of job security for many people in the security.
You can keep trying.
Well, that's right, because you need to have expert people who can keep patching things and, you know, as they are get broken in one place or another.
So it's good news after all.
There are two sides to every kind of question, every issue here. That's right.
Yes. So. But seriously, if people can't build secure systems, what are they supposed to do?
Well, so they cannot build truly secure systems. Mm-hmm. They can build more secure systems. Mm-hmm. So I see my message as a fairly hopeful one. The more effort you put into a system, the more secure it's going to be. The thing is that you're approaching a point of diminishing returns. Yes. At a certain stage, you have to sort of decide, no, it's not worth it. But then, of course, if you discover an attack that exploits something that you haven't yet patched, you may have to go back.
So you're actually saying you need to know when to stop improving your security.
That's right. Okay. It's a trade-off. Yes. It's essentially an economic trade-off. How much effort is it worth to achieve a certain degree of security?
And daar is Bruce Schneier het roerend mee eens.
Well, sure. I mean, it's impossible to build a perfectly secure system. We have no idea how. We have no science. So we have no engineering. We can build aspects of security, but there are always security holes. As a system gets more secure, it also gets more rigid. And rigid systems aren't very useful in human society. That we get a lot of value from the flexibility, from the ad hoc nature, from the adaptability of our systems. And that's a good property. And then trying for security at the expense of those things makes systems that don't work as well, which will force people to go around them, which will subvert the very security you're trying to achieve.
So practicing security is actually looking for an optimum between security as such and flexibility or something.
Well, security is always a trade-off, and you're trading off security for something, for money, for time, for convenience, for capabilities, for liberties. And yes, you're looking for an optimum trade-off. Too much security is bad, right? You'd never hire armed guards to protect a dozen eggs. That just makes no sense. But if you had a dozen diamonds, you might hire armed guards. So you're always making that trade-off. You know, what is the optimal security? And it depends on a lot of things. I mean, that was an example that depended on what the item you're protecting is worth. But it'll depend on other things as well. And certainly, you're not looking for more security. You're looking for some optimal level of security.
Een restant onveiligheid hoort er dus bij. Sterker, zoals Andrew Odlitsko zegt, de reden dat we dat accepteren is dat we per saldo beter worden van het geheel van digitale technologie en de onveiligheden die daarbij horen als botsingen bij het verkeer.
Well, because, I mean, one of the reasons we are tolerating all these problems, and I'm not talking about just insecurity, but just simply the poor interfaces, kind of the poor usability of many of these systems, is they increase our productivity. They also increase our enjoyment, give us access to, you know, new forms of entertainment, and most important, they put us in contact with other people more effectively, and society gains from that. And if you look at what's happened, say over the last 10 years, there's been a huge increase in economic growth rate of the world as a whole. I mean, it's just unprecedented. You have hundreds of millions of people, places like China or India, who are moving into middle class. By world standards, it's unprecedented. You know, average growth rate for the whole world is around 5%. I mean, we don't see it in the United States, you don't see it in Europe, but you know, China is about 10%, India 8% or something like that. Now, up until maybe 10 years ago, there was this famous so-called Solow paradox, named after a well-known economist from MIT, namely Solow, who said that economists could see computers every place but in productivity statistics. Namely, you know, there was a huge, huge investment being made in the information and communication technologies, but it did not seem to be affecting the growth rate of the economy. Well, over the last 10 years, even the skeptics among the economists have kind of, for the most part, changed their opinions, because now they see this faster growth rate, and substantial fraction of that is attributed to the internet. Now, part of it is, of course, general globalization, bigger markets, new economic natural resources, etc. But quite a bit of it is due to these insecure systems. So they are insecure, but they work most of the time.
En het is de taak van mensen als Schneier, Diffie en Odlitsko en van het nieuwe Eindhovense instituut EIPSI om bij voortdurend veranderende omstandigheden van budgetten, technische mogelijkheden, menselijk intellect en menselijk tekort de wereld toch steeds veiliger te maken. Of in ieder geval niet onveiliger. Houd in ieder geval de ogen open voor wat Schneier noemt silly security. Want als iets u belachelijk lijkt, is de kans groot dat u gelijk heeft.
You know, I think that regular people know more than they maybe give themselves credit for. I think when someone goes to the airport and they see security and it looks silly to them, sometimes they think, you know, it looks silly to me, but what do I know? And it turns out they do know. It turns out that if you think something is silly, it likely is. That there probably isn't some secret that you don't know that'll make it all make sense.
Tot zover deze eeuw. Check eeuw.blogspot.com en luister volgende week naar een reportage over e-fashion in de elektronische eeuw.